Not that the talk title on the screen doesn't tell you everything that you need to know. This talk is about regulation and open source. What's real, what isn't, and what's to focus on. Here's Toby Langell.
Thank you, and now I have to wait for a minute. No, I'm joking. All right, I'm very glad to be here with you all today. And I'm here to talk about something that has been sort of talked about quite a bit for quite a number of years in this community, the Cyber Resilience Act, the CRA. And essentially to say that like it is not coming out for you, that's not what the CRA is about. And sort of like hopefully answer some of your questions and allow you to look at this with a little bit more calm. Sort of like trying to find a perspective in your position in this broader change to how software is going to be built in the future. So just some small credentials to like give a bit of context. I'm actually a jazz drummer turned open source developer turned consultant in this space. It's a long story. I'm not going to talk it out today. But I could over beers or something. I run a small consulting firm, which is called Unlock Open. The reasons I'm putting those credentials up is I've been very involved with the CRA's rollout. I helped bootstrap the Open Regulatory Compliance Working Group of the Eclipse Foundation. And I'm a member through Eclipse of the EU CRA Expert Group, which is a group that the European Commission set up that combines on the different countries in the EU, representatives from the different countries, representatives from industry, and from key open source foundations. And so as a result, I get to have conversations with the Commission and the market surveillance authorities, and so I have a better understanding of where this is going than is publicly available for now. So we're going to talk about what is actually the CRA, what problem it's really trying to solve, and whether it's actually coming for you, and we'll look at contributors, maintainers, and also a bit companies. But more from the perspective of like your roles in companies rather than companies themselves. And then briefly, we'll consider whether there are actually more interesting things to dig into the CRA that might possibly help sustain open source a bit better than this today. All right, so what is the CRA? Well, in a nutshell, it is product legislation, right? It is meant to improve the cybersecurity of physical products and software products that are sold on the market, in the European market. It is not for services, right? It is not targeting what people do or how you build software. How you build open source, it is targeting the result of what ends up in the hands of businesses and citizens in the EU. And it is really aimed at those who are building, creating those products, right, and selling them. It is not aimed at folks who are developing software in those products. The problem it's trying to solve, and sort of like where the law originates from, is fairly simple, is software is now everywhere, right, from toys to rovers on other planets. And the increase of cyber attacks in the last few years is costly and impacts businesses and people quite strongly and increasingly so. So that's the problem that the Commission is trying to, well, that Europe is trying to solve with the Cyber Resilience Act. And, you know, technically what it's really targeting are dumb things like this, right? The classic, connected toy with a wide open server to the camera that's inside that's listening to kids. The very poorly designed security camera that has a password 1234. And of course, the famous one for those that paid attention to what happened in France at the Louvre, the famous password for the Louvre security system, which was just Louvre. Right? So that's what is trying to be fixed, right? It is not like your specific open source package. That said, there were very real issues with the earlier versions of the CRA. Like, it was really bad, right? And a lot of people in the community stepped up and did a lot of work to talk to the commission, to talk to the people that were writing it, to talk to folks in the parliament to amend that draft legislation. And frankly, now it's like pretty good. Right? I think it really makes sense. And the more you understand it, and the more you understand sort of like the, all of the framework of legislation that it's built upon, the more it's actually quite reasonable. So key problems have been fixed. That said, there's still a lot of questions in the final text, especially for open source contributors and us really, that are feel like they're unanswered. And the good news is that's getting fixed, and it's getting fixed in that CRA expert group working directly with the commission. So that's reassuring. And the first thing I want you to do, if you haven't looked at the FAQs, is grab this, because that's work that we've been doing to essentially answer those questions. It's ongoing. There's about, expect that the size of it will double in the next, 2 months, let's say. So those are a combination of community questions that are built on top of the knowledge that we're acquiring through the CRA expert group and reading the text and reading other legislation. And they also contain official frequently asked questions from the commission itself that's baked into the whole system. And so that provides a lot more answers and sort of like answers that have a bit more weight than when just the community works on it. So, is the CRA coming for you or your open source community? Well, no, you're not the target at all, right? The target is all of those really egregious cases of like bad software or bad products that we were talking about before. Are contributors subject to the CRA? No, they're not, right? Is a company whose employees are contributing to open source subject to the CRA? No, absolutely not. Is a maintainer subject to the CRA? So the answer to this is essentially no, right? Unless you're making a lot of money doing so, right? So who's here making a lot of money doing open source maintenance? Are you for real? Like, so for the video, like one person actually raised their hand, and now I'm completely confused and my whole sort of like talk is gonna go sideways. Thank you. You and I can talk afterwards. So my consulting fees are like very low.
How much money is a lot of money?
I'm going to address this, but that's a good question. I have a slide for this, so I'm not going to let my deck get derailed. But I'll get to it. Absolutely, that's a good question. So is a maintainer subject to the CRA if they're receiving donations, right? If you have, any kind of donation mechanism? Well, again, no. And again, unless you're making a ton of money out of it, right? If you're receiving grants to develop the project or increase its security or whatnot, like not at all, like regardless of like how much those grants are paying you. If you're getting paid to build open source, right? No. This gets better, right? If you're getting paid to help integrate your own open source project in clients' software, you're still not subject to the CRA. Again, unless you're making a killing with it. And I'll get to what that means now. So what exactly does making a killing mean? Well, I mean, it means like essentially, sustainably, so for a long period of time, not just like 1 month, making more money than is necessary to cover all of your professional costs, right, and your reasonable living expenses. And sure, that is subject to interpretation, et cetera, obviously, but I think, it's a reasonable clarification of the law. Is it the still person?
Minimum wage.
Sorry, what?
Well, you're
first slide translates to minimum wage for the countries that actually have it.
Living wage.
So the question is whether that translates to minimum wage. No, it says reasonable living expenses. You don't know how much time it took to get that level of clarification. This is really precise and specific, let me tell you. No, I mean, look, I am not a lawyer and I'm not your lawyer, right? Just a heads up. But I think, like, if you're making the same kind of money that you would do if you were having the same job as a full-time employee somewhere, plus covering your cost and, you know, all of, like, the self-employment aspects, I think that fits that description, right? If you're living in a country where a developer is making, I don't know, let's say 60,000 euros a year, and you're making 200, it's going to be hard to make the case, right? But also, I mean, if you're making that kind of money, you know, good for you, right? So now moving to what it actually means for companies. So if you're providing as a company integration services for open source, right? Let's say you're installing WordPress for your clients or something like this, right? Then you're out of scope. You're doing a service, right? You're not shipping a product on the market. So you're not impacted. But there is here something to watch out for. A lot of folks who are involved in service business and the integration of open source components look at way to diversify their income by creating adjacent products. And those are in scope, right? And it can be various, very small things, but like a WordPress theme is probably in scope of the CRA, right? So you have to be careful about those. If you're releasing software, if any of your employers are releasing open source software, does that make them in scope? Well, it actually depends. Are you releasing software that's intended for commercial use? Like, is your company using that software itself to, like, sell products? Well, in that case, right, your company is probably the steward of that software, right? And that is a role that is sort of like in between not being in scope and being considered as a manufacturer and fully in scope. It has a very limited set of requirements. You can look up, and they're in the FAQs that I gave you the QR code for earlier. Essentially, that's the case. What's really interesting is if your company is actually selling open source software, right? It is going to be considered a manufacturer when there is a transaction where it's making money off of the software, but the community edition, right, even if it's bit for bit equivalent to the enterprise one, that is that the company will be a steward of that, right? So there's this distinction between, is it open source, right, or is there a contract tied to it and a service agreement, and your company is making money out of it. Yeah, and that's the last one, and that's, I think, one of the most interesting aspects of the law. It's if you use open source in your products, right, as a company, and you sell those products on the market, are you subject to the CRA? Well, yes, absolutely, because you're selling a product, right? But what's most important is you're responsible for all of your open source and all of its dependencies and transitive dependencies, right? So the company making money out of placing the software on the market is the one that is responsible for the security of all of the software that it integrates, right? And that's one of the reasons I believe this legislation is a really good one. Oh, I'm doing very good with time.
Yeah.
I'm going to be able to take questions. This is going to be great. Lastly, and I think this is an interesting point, and there's a lot of work going on in this space right now. there's kind of a question as to whether the survey could help sustain open source, right? And that ties to the question we were just talking about before, which is manufacturers placing products on the market, they're the ones responsible for the security of all of the open source they ingest, right? So you can imagine that it doesn't really scale, and it's not very effective and efficient if every manufacturer like sort of like forks stuff and like fixes security bugs in their own things and then like sort of like maintains those. Like, we know how that goes, right? It's terrible. So the idea is kind of like, wouldn't it be nice if we could shift security upstream to the maintainers where it's a lot more efficient and they know what they're talking about a lot more, right? And of course, there's a tension because the maintainers can just go, well, I don't care, this is not my problem, right? And so the CRA includes this mechanisms called security attestations that are currently being defined, right? The article that defines them is very, very hand-wavy. But the commission can write specific legislation just for this, and it's being discussed. It's being discussed in the ORC working group in collaboration with the commission. So if you're interested, hit that link at the bottom, and the slides will be available. And the idea is essentially, can we provide a mechanism by which maintainers who would want to, right, could essentially sell attestations, remain maintainers, right, not become manufacturers, in order to fund the maintenance and securitization of the open source projects that they maintain. So that's very much an open question at this point. Can it work? Would the manufacturers want to pay for this? So, you know, it's an interesting topic. And I think that's it. I will be able to take questions. And again, if you want to know more and have more questions, you can check this. And you can also file GitHub issues to ask more questions if you want to. Thank you very much.
Easy, one by one.
Hi, Toby. Thank you for the talk. On that last screen, when do you think that we'll have some more clarity on whether or not security attestations can be a model for funding that manufacturers are willing to pay for? Like, what do you think the timeline roughly will?
So that's a great question. I think more clarity will get quite soon. I think throughout the year we'll have an increasing sense of what they could look like. Whether that is an economically viable model is going to take a long, obviously longer to figure out. And it also depends on another sort of like hand-wavy thing in the CRA, and that is exactly how much due diligence manufacturers have to do. So how much do they have to understand the code that they're ingesting, right? The higher the bar, the more they'll be inclined to pay for attestations, obviously, but also the higher the bar, the less they'll be inclined to use open source, right? So it's an interesting tension, and I can't answer whether we'll be able to, you know, collectively get any of this right or not, but I think it's worth trying.
Thank you very much for those slides. I have one question, though. Let's say I'm a manufacturer, I sell hardware, and with that hardware, I also provide open source software from any community, and rebuild those stuff and maybe tweak a little bit and offer this as a service to our clients. What is the status for the manufacturer providing these software now?
So that is a more involved question that I would like to address in this setting, because there's many sort of like additional questions I would have to ask.
Okay.
Because it depends on whether it's complex. It depends on like how data moves from the product to those services. It really depends.
Okay, let's have a chat later, and maybe this is
sure, absolutely.
For the FHQ, because I'm sure others are affected as well. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
Thank you very much. We're on time, so thank you once again, Toby.
Thank you.